and who were infiltrated by the Klan. The significance of that is, I think that the way that Cheney, Goodman, and Schwerner murders are often described, it's as if they were pulled over randomly for being in an interracial car, which couldn't have been farther from the truth. They were being targeted by the Sovereignty Commission. Their every move was watched. This was quite a deliberate act to pull them over. And, you know, it results in their murders. It results in their deaths. And one of the most important events of the Civil Rights Movement, which did actually open up Mississippi. But what a tragic way to do it.
Jerry Mitchell, what were you most surprised by in these documents that you got, especially around this issue of the recruiting of people within the movement and then those not necessarily in the movement? I want to play one more clip, but who were African-American and were leaders and were seen as part of the movement. Let's go back to Spies in Mississippi. This clip includes Lawrence Guiat, a civil rights activist in Mississippi since 1961. It starts, though, with Rick Bowers, author of the book Spies in Mississippi.
Anytime there's a great freedom movement, there are people who end up on both sides. And if we could transport ourselves back to Mississippi at that time, it was a confusing time. There were many shades of opinion on all the issues related to civil rights.
We had a lot of people who felt that there was no way that the civil rights movement could possibly win. So why not get on the winning side early? And others would say, well, the government asked me to do it. Therefore, it has to be legal. The government doesn't do illegal things, does it?
Lawrence Guiat, the civil rights activist in Mississippi since 1961. Jerry Mitchell, talk more about what they're saying.
Well, you have these spies that are hired by detective agencies. That's basically how the Sovereignty Commission is able to operate and kind of keep a bit of distance, if that makes any sense, between them and the spies. So the detective agency is reporting back to them, and they actually don't record the name of the spy in the files. And so that's the way they kind of operated and were able to pull this off. And I might add, you know, some they're actually in case of like B.L. Bell, he actually volunteered his services, which I know seems very odd. But one of the reasons and one of the motivations for some of these spies was money. They were being paid. Percy Green, who is an editor for the Jackson Advocate, was actually sent up north and paid to speak. And he and other speakers like him would say things like, oh, you know, we love Mississippi. We love segregation. We love the way it is right now. And so that the idea behind this is not just spies, but also spreading propaganda, which, of course, like I said, was paid for.
The pastors involved, very painful part of the story. Tell us.
So Reverend H.H. Hume, really influential pastor, huge congregation and a radio audience in Mississippi. And you have to remember at that time, it was really difficult for African-Americans to get that kind of influence. It turns out that he was providing information to the Sovereignty Commission and was being paid for it. You know, it's as if Jesse Jackson was betraying the civil rights community today. That's how significant he was in the state of Mississippi. And I think it speaks to, you know, what Jerry said, there's a particular kind of betrayal when your spiritual leader and a person everyone wants to emulate and look up to turns out to be an informant.
What do you hope to accomplish with this film, Tom?
You know, I really hope everyone is outraged by finding out they're spies during a movement like the Civil Rights Movement that we all now agree led to great freedoms. But I really love the segment you just did. And I think that there's a tie in history. These tactics are not new. The Fourth Amendment and the First Amendment are not convenient. You cannot sometimes have democracy. You need to, you know, these are actually really enemies of our Constitution. And I think that those, when those tactics are still happening today, we need to understand that history.
We have to wrap up, but we're going to do part two, and then we'll post it online at democracynow.org. Including the conversation between Jerry Mitchell and Merle Evers, the widow of Medgar Evers. Jerry Mitchell, thanks for being with us, investigative reporter for the Clarion Ledger, and thank you so much to Dawn Porter, Spies of Mississippi. is her PBS Independent Lens film. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez. I'm Alkaf Hani Massoud. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
On your concert billboard for Sunday, February 23rd, the 52nd Street Jazz Band will be at Big Daddy's, Massapequa, 12:30. Tom Falco and Kevin Griffin will be at the Grey Horse Tavern in Bayport at 1. Buddy Merriam and Backroads will be at Bedell's Cellars, Cutchog, 1:30. The Bolton Center in Bayshore welcomes a Falsettos at 2. Pesky J. Nixon and Miles to Dayton will be at the University Cafe right here, Stony Brook University, 2 p.m. The Toasters, Mrs. Scanato, The Pandemics, The Shipwrecks will be at 89 North in Patchogue, beginning at 5. On your WUSB concert billboard for Monday, February 24th. Brian Sutton, Michael Daves will be at the Rockwood Music Hall, Stage 2, 8 p.m. B.B. King's Manhattan welcomes Kiko Matsui at 8. Papa Chubby will be at the Iridium, Manhattan, 8 p.m. Your concert billboard for Tuesday, February 25th. Solo Joe will be at Big Daddy's Massapequa. Shaggy will be at the Brooklyn Bowl at 8. The Fray will be at Webster Hall, the Marlin Room, 8 p.m. Looking ahead to Wednesday, February 26th, Emblem 3 will be at the Paramount in Huntington Village at 7.
Where else can you hear about all these shows? Of course, WUSB Stony Brook. But to make that happen, we have to pay the bills. Give generously. Call 631-632-6901.
And it's 4 minutes after 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. Time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. We're back on the air. It's true. WUSB has restored its signal, so we are now able to be heard in all the places that we were not being heard in last week and the week before that. Welcome back to those listeners who can now pick us up again. Feels good to actually be on a radio station, not just a podcast. We are still a podcast as well, but we also have most of Suffolk County and other parts as well to broadcast to. So that's good news. That might be, well, I guess there's other good news today, but there's certainly a lot of disturbing news as well. And of course, whenever there's disturbing news, you have to look towards Arizona, because that's where it seems to always emanate from. The governor, Jan Brewer, is in the process of flying home after 5 days in Washington to deal with this this controversial bill that she's either going to sign or veto. The pundits seem to be saying that she's going to veto this, which probably is the wisest thing. There's a part of me, though, that wants her to pass it just so there can be all kinds of reaction against this idiocy. The bill, in case you have not heard about it, has to do with businesses that decide that they don't like gay people, and as a result, they don't have to serve them. It's incredible. It's basically legalizing discrimination and hiding behind religion as an excuse. It's insulting to so many people on so many levels. Yet it passed. It passed the the state senate and the house in Arizona. I mean, think about that. Think how crazy that is that this actually passed. But it did, without any real opposition. I have the worst headphones in the world, I think. I don't know what's if you could hear what I'm hearing right now, you'd realize why I'm so confused sounding. I'm hearing static, I'm hearing some music, I'm hearing my voice overmodulated. Yeah, okay. You know, now I hear the music and I don't hear my voice. So I don't know. How is that possible? How can headphones do that? Make my voice not work and make the music work and vice versa. Okay. I'm just glad we're back on the air. That's I guess I have to accept all this other nonsense. But wow, these are simply incredible headphones. I don't know how they do what they're doing. I just hope that noise isn't actually going over the air. Well, I guess we'll see. This bill is called Senate Bill 1062, and it allows businesses whose owners cite sincerely held religious beliefs to deny service to gays. Yeah, so all you have to do is say, yeah, you know what, my religion tells me to hate these particular people, so I don't want to serve them. And no matter what kind of business you operate, you can get away with that, according to this bill. And any business, a church, people, they can cite that law as a defense in any action brought by the government or an individual claiming discrimination. Basically, no more discrimination. Yeah, because there is no such thing as discrimination. It's legal. Now, it's quite likely she's going to veto this bill, but I don't think that should be the end of the conversation, because the fact that it got this far in the first place indicates there is something really seriously wrong with the people out there. This is, what, 1980? No, wait, it's not even that. It's not even 19. It's 2000 and what? Where are we now? No way. 2014? Whew. I slept a long time. 2014 and we're still dealing with this? What the hell is wrong with these people? And the other question I have about this is how exactly do they plan on defining gay people? How are they going to do that? How are they going to prove that somebody is gay so they don't want to serve them? You know, is there some kind of a test? And if the person turns out not to be gay and then they're discriminated against because they are, well, then do they have recourse? Yeah, the discrimination is not a problem of being accused of being gay. Yeah, that's an offense. That could be what we're looking at. And, you know, why can't we extend this to other religions as well? Because, you know, the one thing religious groups really detest are other religious groups. So, you know, if someone's Muslim, why not? How about race? Let's throw that in as well. You know, black people might offend you. Should you really be penalized for not wanting to serve them? If it goes against your religious beliefs, and yeah, you know, you can find in pretty much any religion something that can excuse any kind of hatred if you interpret things in a bizarre, twisted way. So, yeah, you know, we're going to find out in a couple of days, I would imagine. And don't forget, this is the same state that had that whole immigration thing a few years ago. You know, where all kinds of checks and rights violations were instigated against people who were suspected of maybe being Mexican. Well, yeah, I guess this law now can apply to them as well. You know, I don't think you might be Mexican, so we're not going to serve you. But I remember, you know, I was out there, and I think there were three different searches. Well, actually, I was on a bus for a little while, and I was driving for a little while. I got stopped in a car more than 100 miles from the border, I believe, but they wanted to make sure I wasn't Mexican. And same thing on the bus. They came onto the bus, pulled off everybody who was Spanish, whether they were American or not, and they wanted to ask them more questions. And it's really, you know, it's not a healthy way to live. So it's not surprising that this kind of a thing would also pop up as well. So, but, you know, think of kids growing up in a place like that, you know, and think of the message that sends to them, even if the governor vetoes this thing in the first place. Imagine knowing that the way you might be is enough reason for you to be discriminated against and for the majority of people to want that. And for at least the possibility to exist that they can get away with this. You know, for people who are going through really difficult times in their lives, this is the thing that tips the balance. You know, knowing that that you're facing a lifetime of discrimination and hatred. And for what reason exactly? Why is this even happening? You know, I really would like to know, where did this come from? And, you know, the crazy thing is, if you're doing business, you know, with the public, I think right away, you know, you're the one that decided you want to deal with the public. Well, this is the public. Welcome to the public. These are who the people of our country are. And if you don't want to deal with that, then don't deal with the public. You don't get to pick and choose and say, well, yeah, I like you because you're whiter than this guy, so you can shop here, but you can't. This is what we went through in the 1950s, for God's sake. Really disgusting. So, yeah, keep an eye on that. That story will be developing in the days ahead. Something more positive. I'm not sure how positive it's ultimately going to be, but I think we all followed what was going on in Ukraine. Yeah, finally, they did it. Finally, they got rid of the guy. And now Yanukovych is on the run someplace. But it's really, you know, kind of a bizarre situation because in the East, they are very pro-Russian. I'm not even sure why they want to be in Ukraine. They fly Russian flags. They speak Russian. They have Russian monuments. They defend any kind of Russian viewpoint over a Ukrainian viewpoint. They welcome Yanukovych. That's where he is right now, somewhere in the East. And meanwhile, in the West, and Kiev is kind of, I think, in the middle, sort of. They're to the north, but they're kind of not really that far to the west, but they're not in the east either. But Kiev certainly is more Western sentiment than the eastern part of the country. Now, what is going to happen? You know, Russia has said they're not going to intervene, but that could change. Remember what happened in Georgia, where those two republics closer to the Russian border decided they wanted Russian protection, quote unquote. And it's pretty much an occupied area right now. It's not even on paper, it's part of Georgia, but Georgian authorities have no power over that region of the country. I don't even know why you would want to hang on to a part of the country that doesn't want to be part of your country. What's the advantage of that? So the same situation might occur in Ukraine. It's something to keep an eye on. And interesting times ahead. And who would have thought, you know, with the Olympics happening over the past couple of weeks, that was when all hell would break loose in Ukraine, and that's when the change in government would finally happen. Everyone was looking for Sochi or that area of Russia to have some kind of incident. Of course, nothing happened, except if you want to consider the appearance of a couple of Pussy Riot members and a gay activist or two as incidents. And it's incredible, you know, that's always what it comes down to. You have this massive security force to protect the people, but the ones you clamp down upon are the people that should be protected and encouraged. So these implements are misused and then credited with keeping everybody safe. So it's a bitter irony there. Anyway, so they're building a new government over in Kiev right now. Today, they actually were facing resistance, more resistance from street protesters and some members of parliament who objected they were moving too fast and making up a new cabinet just 3 days after the old regime collapsed. New ministers for every department were supposed to be in place by the end of today, but strenuous protests from the city's main square, that's still thickly populated with demonstrators, upset over a lack of input, forced the leaders of parliament to wait at least until Thursday. And, yeah, that's what Yulia Tymoshenko was encouraging, that they stay there. That was kind of neat to see her speaking to the crowd. Unfortunately, from a wheelchair at the moment. The braids, they survived. And there's a whole new bit of history awaiting us. And I remember, you know, Kyle and I being there only a couple of years ago, seeing some of this firsthand. We happened to show up on the day of the 20th anniversary. There's a whole big celebration going on in that very same square that would have such bloodshed, snipers, horrible things like that, only a few days ago. We saw the demonstrations on one of the main streets of the two opposing camps, the ones that wanted to free Tymoshenko and the ones that were pro Yanukovych. And just the difference between those two places was really incredible. You know what? I'm going to try and reach Kyle right now. We have this new app that we discovered, and it was used. It was used by the Ukrainians as part of their uprising. It's kind of like having a walkie-talkie to anywhere in the world. So hang on a second. I've got it right here. You get this big circle on your phone, and you press a button, and you wind up talking to somebody. Let's see if we can get a response. I'm going to press the button now. Okay, why isn't it? There we go. Hey, Kyle, are you there? I'm talking to you on the walkie-talkie. I guess I should have said over. And I don't know. I don't know if that worked. Not hearing anything in response. Can you believe it? It's the university again calling me. I'm sorry, Kyle. Hold on a second. The university was calling to want money from me I'm not talking to you because I didn't press the button. Kyle, I'm sorry. Hold on a second. You know what? I can play that message back because there's a button to press it back. Hold on one second. Wait for my second message. Now I'm going to press this button.
Over.
That's all he said was over? Okay, Kyle, apparently all you did was say over. Could you send a message that says more than that? Over. And I don't know what that means. I think that means that Starnberg just left a message. Isn't it ironic that they're calling in the middle of the show to ask for donations to the university? Okay. Kyle's transmitting, but he's not saying anything. You know, this worked a lot better yesterday when we were playing with it. This is, and it's taking a very long time because the Wi-Fi here is awful, so I'm using the phone network, and apparently it's not a strong signal. You know what? I'm just going to get on the phone here. Yeah. Sometimes you have to rely on the old-fashioned ways of communicating. What a horrible noise.
Hello?
Hey, Kyle. We're having some trouble with that walkie-talkie thing. I don't know if you were able to pick that up.
Oh, no, I don't have a radio or anything on, so you just said that you were gonna get in touch on the walkie-talkie.
Yeah, and I did. I talked. I said something. Then you said over. Then the university started bombarding me with calls wanting money.
Oh, wow.
I don't think we ever actually got a message through. The thing is, I'm pressing the button, right? And it usually turns red when I press the button, but this time it's not. I think because I'm using a weak phone signal instead of Wi-Fi.
Go ahead. Send your traffic. Over.
Okay, we got that. And it seemed to be the same exact time as you talking on the phone. There was no delay. Let me respond. Oops.
Yeah, reading you loud and clear. Reading you five. Affirmative. Over.
All right, now let me try and respond to this. Okay, Kyle, I'm responding now. Do you hear anything I'm saying? Did you?
Yeah, I'm reading you five. Over.
Okay, you know, I was hoping you'd respond on the phone.
I can hear you fine. It works now. I just muted my phone.
Okay, I get it.
I can hear you in real time.
That's pretty cool. So it's a neat little device, and this is what the people in Ukraine were using when they were having their demonstrations. Is that right?
Roger.
Okay, I'm talking to you on the walkie-talkie now as well as the microphone.
Roger.
All right. But I don't know how... apparently, there's a channel feature. You can make a channel, and you can have all these people join the channel. And I guess it's sort of like having a CB radio, except it's all around the world. I can't imagine how that can't be really, really confusing.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have essentially like a huge group of people, or maybe you'd have several smaller channels. But you can add your own, or there are a list of other ones that you can try to join, and you can eat. There's three different modes. I was looking around in the settings, and one is a broadcast mode, the other is a public channel, and the other is a protected channel.
A protected channel?
Yeah, that's like if you have a pass key to get into the...
Oh, I see. Okay. It's kind of like IRC, except audio, and you can have invite only or passwords or things like that.
Right, and everybody hears what you're saying that's in the channel, or if it's a direct communication. And it's that history feature that's kind of cool, because if you miss a couple of them, unlike your like traditional radio, I guess, you can go scroll back and replay stuff, and even listen to the signals and messages you sent.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, we discovered this yesterday, that, wow, there's a record of what we were saying, and I think both of our reactions were, wow, that's pretty cool. But when you think about it, it's also kind of scary that all of your communications are saved. I think they're saved on the phone, right? Or are they also saved someplace else?
That's a really good question, and I don't know enough about this particular app, really, to know. I know the application itself was very small, like a footprint, and it's a multi-platform bit of software. I don't know how open it is as far as like how it works. But I know there's a PC version, and yeah, I don't know. I mean, I presume people can develop with it and get more information about how it works and where stuff is stored. I mean, they seem to be right here on the phone, so I don't know. Is it pulling it back from my carrier? But I mean, I don't feel like they would want to store a bunch of data. So is it on Zello's server somewhere, wherever they may be? All interesting questions.
Yeah, the company is called Zello, by the way. I don't know if we mentioned that before now. And it's pretty cool. It works on BlackBerry. It works on Android. It works on iPhones. And it seems to be pretty seamless. But, you know, I guess if you have Wi-Fi, it's great because it works really well. But if you have a weak phone signal and no Wi-Fi, then it's a little bit more difficult. And I of course, wonder if in a situation where there's lots and lots of people, it might be almost impossible to communicate.
Yeah, you'd have to. But if you imagine you could create your own infrastructure, like set up an access point and have everyone on it that way locally.
Yeah, true.
But then again, would it need to be connecting to some third party, whoever develops these kinds of tech, you know, software programs? You know, does it rely on their stuff, or, you know, does it? I believe you can go through and erase your history. I did see that in there when I was playing around with this particular one. So maybe it is something that's just locally stored, and it seems to, I don't know, compress things and not take up a lot of room. Maybe they've thought into this a little bit. I'm pretty sure they don't keep logs. I believe I heard that in some of the news about it.
Well, that's what they say anyway. But
right. I mean, they'd really this day and age, you kind of want to play that up, right? You know.
Well, I mean, one of the concerns I had with the channel was that you have a list of everybody that's in the channel. I believe any user can get that. And isn't that more information that the authorities could use as one member of that channel to pretty much nail people who are participating in something?
Absolutely. Like, if these companies have a chilling kind of situation on their hands, it very much could be, because they have all your phone numbers. I mean, I very quickly set it up, and it does ask you, hey, you know, are you cool with us having information about you, e.g. gleaning things from your carrier or from the device? And I wanted to play with the software, and I think a lot of other people do that with these apps. And so I said, okay, and I saved it and then went on my merry way.
And they want you to always import your contacts from Facebook and Twitter and God knows what else, and even email. And I always bypass all of that. I don't link any of these things together because I know how that can get out of hand pretty quickly. And I, you know, I want to protect lists from other services, unless I'm really, really sure that I want that list to be on that service. You know, we've seen a lot of abuses of that over the past months and years, and I don't want to be part of that.
Certainly. And we all have the choice to stop using things that we believe are hostile to our privacy.
Yeah. You know, I use Gmail. I do use Gmail occasionally. It's convenient for some things, but I never would use it for something sensitive. But every time I go in there, I'm nagged about something that I didn't give them. And, you know, they're basically saying, you want to connect this to this particular service over here because it's better. And I don't want to do that. And there's no way to say no. You know, all you can do is say, not now. And then they come back and say, okay, we'll ask you later. They never give up. And eventually, we're only human. We're gonna give up and say, okay, leave me alone already. I'll sign up for what you keep nagging me to sign up for. And yeah, it's annoying.
Certainly.
So Ukraine, we were there. We were in the very place that we're talking about. And what do you think about all the things that have been happening?
Wow. It's been quite a February here. A lot of excitement out there. I mean, remember the Euro event was going on, a lot of camaraderie, bringing people together around sports, and it seems like Ukraine was actually where a lot of the tension during the Russian games manifested.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it really came to a crescendo, and now I think, I don't know, it's going to be a much different place. It's hard to imagine because it was such a happy atmosphere during the Independence Day celebration. I mean, big bucks, like the whole, you know, the video screens that like cover everything. It was like two blocks of video screens.
Yeah.
And all this choreographed entertainment, and it was quite a celebration. And amidst the protests that were, you know, coinciding as they ought to with the independence and stuff. So it just boggles my mind, especially they were getting ready for football. I mean, it's a very, very modern city. These are established governments, nations, and this is what happens. So all you militias and, you know, crazy people that, you know, want to think about what would happen, you know, if the government, you know, falls apart or any of these kind of notions, you look at these examples and you go, whose side would you be on, you know? And like, mm-hmm. what is the role of citizens and like our interaction with the government? It really kind of makes you want to double down and you know, be an active, like a public citizen and take hold of the craziness here, because it was like a powder keg the whole week, the whole 2 weeks. You just kept watching it, and it's mirroring a lot of these other events, like the Arab Spring, Tunisia, and Egypt, and that kind of stuff. I can't say enough about it. I mean, it's just really been riveting, and now I think everybody's wondering where Yushchenko is, where in the world he is.
Yes, where is he exactly? They're trying to find him. It's an arrest warrant out now for him, and it's interesting to see these things progress, because originally he wasn't backing down at all. Then he signed the agreement, and then he appeared from someplace else saying this was a coup, I'm still in charge, but he wasn't wanted at that point. Then all of a sudden the arrest warrant was issued, and now he's in hiding. And eventually he probably will be found. Maybe the people in the East are protecting him. Who knows how that will play out. And then we'll see how this new government works out. But, you know, I have the feeling that the same thing is going to happen again, because back in 2004, there was another revolution, the Orange Revolution, I believe. And a lot of the people that were on the same side are bitter enemies now.
Right. The tone of things is that, oh, this is a coup. I think his regime is saying that, this was a, you know, hostile kind of takeover, as, you know, as if that's remotely going to, you know, help the situation for him. But exactly, what do you do? These are people defending their independence of the real, real people that, and when we were there, when we saw the one side of the street and the other side of the street, and then the DMZ with the Ukrainian police and sort of the staged thugs with their banners and everything, and then like the real tents, do you remember? It was like a village.
Yeah.
Pamphlets and like real people with something to say and stories.
Well, it was basically a tent with two halves to it. I mean, it was a huge tent. It was on one side of a main street, and they both had megaphones and PA systems going, spouting forth their various rhetoric and things, but they were going at the same time. They were talking over each other, so you couldn't understand anything that was being said unless you were in the tent yourself. And we basically crossed the street and we walked into the first tent, which was the one with the people that wanted to free Tymoshenko.
Right.
And it was a bunch of mostly elderly people, I think, pretty, you know, friendly, handing out brochures and things like that. We walked into the other tent and we just were met with all this suspicion and hostility, and we started getting followed by these like, you know, menacing looking guys. And we were recording this too. I believe we have part of that in our show. And it was like night and day. Usually I see, you know, okay, this side has some points, this side has some other points. In this particular case, it was, this is the scary side, this is the nice side. That's really what it was.
You just really saw that side was the regimes. They have to match the shouting and screaming on the other that is real from the people, lest it amass in numbers. They have to divide us to keep power, right? And they had to mimic that. And so it was like having your little Boy Scouts or your National Guards waving flags under, like, black mesh fence, and then having plainclothes thugs shooing reporters, anybody who wasn't in agreement. And then, like, little kids, like, throwing pants, like, hold it, not kids, but, like, just the helpers young people that weren't doing the flag, you know, whatever, mask games, flag wavy thingy, but they were like stuffing, you know, holding pamphlets through the barrier. But then if, you know, you wanted to photograph or like go in, there wasn't anything to go in. It was like basically evenly spaced little recruits doing their flag waving to make it look like there was something there. And then the obviously the loudspeaker. So it was just this propped up as a part of the security for the entire protest there. And it really felt contrived and fake. And I realized, and I've seen this, you know, you saw it with Occupy, you saw it with, Arab Spring, and then when we were there during this kind of independence slash protest thing in Ukraine, mm-hmm. you and then going to other places like Belarus, you realize that that power is quite a thing to go up against. And if the government isn't with you, and it's some private entity, they'll get their private police and their private security,
yes.
and that kind of thing. And it really is a problem. And I think it keeps people from raising their voices about simple things like wages and you know, their everyday kind of problems connecting with their communities.
You mentioned we were there and they're doing the football thing afterwards. And yes, we were there in 2011 in the summer, and Euro 2012 took place in Poland and Ukraine. And so that was the big deal, getting the city ready for that, getting the country ready for that. You know, wondering, are there going to be any problems? Is it going to the same basic thing that happened with the Olympics? And of course, you know, it went off just fine. But that was one of the things going on in the city at that particular time, was rebuilding stadiums and things like that. I found actually online the shows that we did from there. We aired those in January of 2012. So if you want to hear not only Ukraine, we have a couple of shows. I think we titled them Bitching About Belarus, because we had so many things to complain about while we were in Belarus. And that certainly was pretty enlightening as well.
But they love sports, and it's a very clean city, and I have nothing against the Belarusians. And if they find my water bottle, they can send it back to me.
Yes, you left your water bottle in the hotel room in Minsk. So if anyone finds a nondescript water bottle, that would be Kyle's. Yeah, I'm sorry that happened. But you have a nice new water bottle now, which I think works.
Well, the reward is a McDonald's.
We actually, you know, everything you say has a reason, has some allusion. Yes, we went to a McDonald's, the McDonald's in Minsk, and that was the, we're talking about Belarus now, not Ukraine, so people aren't confused. That was the central gathering point in the entire city, it seemed. Everybody was there. How long did it take you to get those burgers you were waiting online for?
20 minutes, I don't know. There was like five lanes. They were all like packed, you know, practically halfway through the dining area.
I was outside. I wasn't feeling well, so I was trying like to not to stand on lines, but I was waiting to get a table because there weren't any tables. It was that crowded. And I think I got one right before you emerged from McDonald's with the goods. So, yeah, it was very competitive, very social place, as opposed to many of the other places we went to, which were pretty empty.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'd say you don't even have to be a big multinational fast food corporation. You could even just be like a small deli. And Belarus, Minsk in particular, they'll have you. They could use a good sandwich guy. I mean, a nice, happy place to get a good meal.
I
think they would welcome that. There.
I don't know if that's allowed. I don't know if that's legal, because I think you have to be surly and cranky to run an establishment. With the exception of McDonald's, they're friendly there. But I mean, do you remember the pizza incident? Remember that?
Yes, when we went in the wrong lines and this and that.
Yeah.
Oh, wrong order, pickup versus paying at the right time. Then you come back, you get the receipt, and you go to the checkout, and then you bypass her. But no, you got to pay after you pick up, so you have the receipt, then you go back. I don't understand it.
She was screaming at you at the top of her lungs, and then screaming at the poor guy who made the pizza, who apparently didn't fill out the right form.
Yeah.
And that's not even counting the 20-minute wait for beer that we had to stand on a different line for, because somebody was sampling every single kind that they had or just thinking it over, and nobody else thought to go ahead of them.
E?
Yes.
So we've been to a lot of countries with these security forces, though. I mean, like the London, that was a sporting event, and then Ukraine, and then Poland, they were building stuff too, right?
Yes, that's correct.
That's also part of the Euro events?
Yes, that was Euro 2012 as well, Poland and Ukraine. Oh,
so yeah. Ukraine and Poland hosted, it was like a bi-hosting thing, isn't that what it was?
Yes, they shared.
Got it. And then we also witnessed a lot of the build-up and apparatus for the London event, and then whatever the heck happened in Russia was beside all of this activity in Ukraine. And, gosh, yeah. I guess it just added to the list. And here we are in 2014, and it seems like none of this is stopping, right? You know, it's still there's still something bubbling in the world, and I think people are conscious and paying attention.
Well, I just wonder if maybe Belarus will be the next country to see some kind of an uprising, because it is known as the last dictatorship in Europe. In fact, it even says that as you enter the country, welcome to the last dictatorship. No, I'm kidding, but they might as well, because everyone refers to it that way. And, I saw a lot of young people there that seemed to have some spirit. And I think it wouldn't take much to make them actually start demanding some basic freedoms that are denied to them in that particular country.
Easily.
Yeah, so that's one to watch. And I'm sure Russia is watching that as well. It's kind of scary thinking what their reaction might be to all these things happening as one of the former superpowers, seeing all the former republics moving more to the West. But it's not always a good thing when they move to the West, because sometimes a lot is lost in that process. But there does seem to be less bloodshed from what I can tell when something like that does happen.
I'm interested in that. I mean, I see that here in the West, right? In the U.S., where people sometimes wonder. I mean, we felt that during Occupy stuff, and we were witnessing that,
yes,
right in New York.
Yes.
It was incredible, because people were, you know, making noise and unifying, even though they didn't agree at all. They realized there was something keeping them from having, you know, opportunities and on and on and on and on and on. Everybody's individual reasons with, you know, a lot of what was going on, the finances and the economy here. So, it speaks to it, I think, in a lot of ways. And I don't know, it's instructive. We are working within a mechanism, and I think it's important to find your voice as a public citizen and take hold of that apparatus, you know, and really direct it as a nation.
Well, one thing that I think, yeah, you definitely draw upon there is the similarity of such actions, and also the similarity in the reaction against people occupying a square, because, yeah, the authorities were just as vicious against the people who were basically taking up space in a park, and not just in New York, in California, in almost every city. These things were broken up very forcefully, eventually, after being tolerated for a little while. Now, had there been the kind of resistance that we've seen in so many other places,
yeah,
do we really think that bloodshed would not have followed here? I think it very well would have. And people seem to think that it's above us, we're above that it can't possibly happen here. But it can happen anywhere. You know, a Western society, an Eastern society. It tends not to happen as much in our country, but I think that's more because the people don't resist as much.
That, and I can only hope that we do channel it towards the mechanisms of government, and as much as, you know, you may loathe watching C-SPAN or something, being engaged and participating is a good that is a democratic manifestation, and it might be slow and cumbersome and lousy, but that's what we have here, you know. And you know, you just hope for it elsewhere, and I don't know. It's just tough to watch it become explode like that, and I really don't like seeing entities in power, like especially private corporations, just be paid off and then poof, you know, obliterating dissent from a community that is legitimizing their right to voice that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when people give up on their right to dissent in the first place, that's when the battle is truly lost. It's one thing for the government to try to do that, but when the people accept that and just go about their lives, I think China is a good example of that, because over there, everyone has their consumer goods now. You know, it's a very capitalist society in that regard. But actual freedom of speech, that sort of gets swept under the rug. You know, in a country where there are economic problems, where people don't have enough to eat, it's a lot easier to rebel. But when you make people comfortable with their SUVs and their, you know, housing and all that, then it's harder to get people riled up, because why should they? You know, they've got everything they need.
Yeah. Can I tell a story about that?
If the story takes 2 minutes, you can tell it. Yes.
So there's a guy, my neighbor, I'm not going to name him.
Okay.
He became homeless, and he was living under a bridge here. He built a shelter. It was really kind of a nice impromptu little shelter. And today I went out there, and I saw, I was thinking, gosh, you know, we should build shelters. Like, there's all these cool projects, the Hexa Yurt and Wiki House, all these cool things for building habitats, affordable housing. Uh-huh. And here they were building them with pallets out here. And he lived for 8 months under this bridge. Well, the asphalt company that is a tenant here, I guess a group of the tenants around there in the buildings there, decided that they were going to knock it over today. And so I was watching them with their backhoe, like the boss and then whoever's driving, destroy it. And then later on they had the city come up and pick up all the debris. And there's another guy that was camping there who's a vet, and he had a little tent out there. And he was packing up his things. He had lived there for a while. And he was yelling at me when I was riding my bicycle, and he said that they just didn't want them there anymore.
Wow.
And there's a lot going on with that, like income inequality and the homeless. Like, and a lot of them have been out there so long they just want to be left alone. And these guys... we're doing all right. They're peaceful people, but we don't have things for them. And these entities, they pay their rent, and they decide they don't want it. They just knock it over, make it look junky and not usable.
Right.
And then the city comes and picks up the debris. And now, an 80-year-old diabetic has to find another place to sleep when he doesn't go to a shelter or wherever else he goes.
Yeah, the issue is that this guy has no place to live. That should be what people are upset about, not the fact that, oh, look, I can see him from my window, you know?
Right.
That points out...
That's enigmatic, or not enigmatic, illustrative. It is an example of just every day you see these kind of things, and, you know, what can I do? Here I was pretty impressed with the engineering, and wow, you know, somebody's just... They're able to live like this, but, you know, society doesn't like it. It's an eyesore or whatever, and they just remove the blight, and to hell with the humans involved.
Yeah, they don't actually do anything about the problem. I wish we could talk about this more, but we're out of time. But that's a sad story to end on, certainly. But hopefully we'll have more upbeat stories in the future, and... hopefully this guy, your friend, will be okay.
I hope so.
All right. Well, anyway, Kyle, it's great hearing from you, and I'm sure we'll be in touch in the near future. You want to try one more transmission on the walkie-talkie? You want to send me a message?
Roger that. Over and out.
Yeah, okay, that's real creative and imaginative there. Over and out for me as well. We'll see you next time. Have a good night.
I used to think the world was flat. Really threw my head into the crowd. I felt I had used up my quota of yearning. Used to looking on the children at night. in the glow of their diamond dark light, and frighten myself with the thought of my little ones burning. But oh, the tide is turning. Satellite buzzing through the endless night, exclusive to moonshots and world title fights. Jesus Christ, imagine what it must be earning. Who is the strongest? Who is the best? Who holds the aces, the east or the west? This is the crap our children are learning. Thank you.
Hey kids, Finn with you. Finn's Revolution until the 9 p.m. hour right here on WUSB Stony Brook. In this first hour, we have author Waif Ett, who will be talking about her fantastic new collection, Cigarettiquette. And stay tuned for that. Plus, lots and lots of weird music. Plus, some great previews of tomorrow night's gig in Long Island City. Stay tuned. Great Sugar Minotte in the background right here, the late, great Sugar Minotte, right here on WUSB Stony Brook. As always, we started off with The Prisoner. This is Finn, and this is Finn's Revolution until 9 p.m. And we are lucky enough to have author Waif Ett with us. Waif Ett, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me, Finn.
And it's fantastic to have you on board here on WUSB. You have been writing for a while now. First of all, before we get into the book,
okay,
what exactly? Tell us how you got into writing. Is this something that's you're a late bloomer, an early? What's the story?
I'm definitely an early bloomer. I definitely was writing as early as I was reading, which was like 4 to 5. So okay. I remember in kindergarten. A friend and I used to just hide under the table in recess and put little pieces of paper together and staple it into little books that we would then write and illustrate and think we could sell them, but nobody's really interested in buying books in kindergarten. So, you know, we were just kind of getting our little kicks ourselves by just acting out being writers. And then as I got older, you know, I was into creative writing. I did a lot of stuff with high school. And in college, it was just kind of an independent thing. I did it by myself. Didn't really become very active as a writer, actually, until about 3 years ago when I started promoting Cigarettiquette.
Okay. So as far as influences in your writing, who were your early influences? I'm not talking about in kindergarten necessarily, but a little further on.
Okay. Biggest literary influence, I'd have to say, is Kerouac. I'm a huge fan of the beat movement. Mm-hmm. I like breaking boundaries. I like talking about the things people don't like to talk about. Mm-hmm. Also really big into, you know, Shakespeare, the classics. I have a wide – if you come to my house, you'll see that I have, like, a massive book collection, books upon books upon books. So
well, you have to give us all your address and we'll come to your house.
I could definitely chew your ear off about the influences, but Kerouac for sure is the
main. So the beats are a big thing.
Yeah.
Naturally.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you know, for a few years, not the last two, for various scheduling reasons, we always did a live broadcast from down in Northport at Gunther's Tavern.
Yes.
On during Cow Harbor Day, which is right around Kerouac's birthday.
I've heard a lot about the Kerouac events that they have in Northport.
Yeah, so we've done a few live broadcasts from there, which is very cool. We always love to do that, and big Kerouac fan myself. Okay, so you went to school where?
I actually started my college experience at Stony Brook. I was here for about 2.5 years.
And then you escaped?
Yes. Then I ran and was hoping to never look back. but then I ended up moving out to Long Island for work in 2011. And that took me kind of back home, I guess you could say.
Okay.
And I started getting involved with the poetry scene on Long Island a little bit less than a year ago.
Okay. And there's lots of good groups, and you're currently kind of working with?
I'm a frequenter at the Music Exchange, right. But I do go to the, you know, PPA events, different Bards Initiative events, all different Long Island poetry events, and even New York City when time permits and scheduling, you know, is there for me to do that.
So at these events, you're reading both prose and poems, or what's going on?
Lately, I have been mixing in a little bit of excerpts from the book just to do a little bit of self-promotion, but I mostly stick to the poetry. I try to stick to whatever format the event announces itself as.
Obviously.
Try to be respectful to the aura of the event.
Sure.
Okay. So I mix it up.
Okay. So the history of the book that's out now, Cigarette Etiquette.
It is quite a long history.
Go ahead.
Started writing the book, I'd say, around 2007, 2008. So it was a work in progress for many years. And the idea kind of came about through the Lorax, the idea of the Lorax.
Dr. Seuss.
And the Lorax being, you know, the little creature that speaks up for the trees because they're unable to speak for themselves and or there's nobody to speak for them. And from my perspective, smokers are a lot like trees because either people are unwilling to not condone or promote being a smoker, but to defend the rights and joys and lifestyle of being a smoker.
Mm-hmm.
And starting smoking around 18, it was something that I identified with very strongly. It became crucial to, like, my independence and my individuality, and that was something that I found myself kind of coming back to in my writing. So it kind of came as, like, a short story idea, and then the short story became a longer short story, and then a novella, and then it became this growing thing that I had to do something with. I felt it needed to be out there.
Okay. And you live on Long Island now, right?
Yes,
what town do you live in?
I live in Huntington.
Okay. So Huntington, not so much, but most of Long Island... not very smoker friendly.
No.
Huntington is not either. It's just the current climate we live in, but a little more so. I think there was for a few years, and I don't know if there still is, but there was like some kind of hookah bar or something there.
Actually, you're not allowed to smoke cigarettes in hookah bars anywhere.
Yeah, but I mean tobacco, though, was available.
Yeah, they're still around. You could still find hookah bars out here and like tobacco shops where you can smoke inside.
Right.
Because I believe if you sell... If 85% of your revenue comes from tobacco, then you're allowed to get a license for indoor use. But not a lot of places do, or there's not enough interest for a place to sustain itself.
As opposed to in the city where there's a lot more of those kinds of venues.
Yes.
I have to tell you, you know, where I live in Astoria, there's up until about 2 years ago, it's a big Greek neighborhood, a big European neighborhood, and... it was very rare that most of the, like, bars